Fracking for natural gas has had its ups and downs in Pennsylvania, but many in Ohio are eagerly eyeing the industry's growth there.
What's going to happen in this region, in the Utica and the Marcellus Shale plays, is going to impact us in a positive direction for the next 100 years.
I'm Carol Holsapple. This week on the Allegheny Front, betting on the future of natural gas. Meanwhile, Pennsylvania's governor is positioning himself as a champion of green energy.
The future is going to be solar, wind, sustainable and renewable energy.
But what has he done to make more renewable energy a reality in the state? For that matter, what will any of the candidates in the upcoming midterms do about the environment in Pennsylvania?
For a lot of the candidates, there wasn't a lot of specificity in how to address these issues.
We know because we surveyed some of them. Those and more environmental stories are coming up on the Allegheny Front. Stay with us. The head of the Environmental Protection Agency was in Pittsburgh Wednesday, praising the Trump administration's environmental rollbacks. At an oil and gas conference, EPA Acting Administrator Andrew Wheeler said that carbon pollution in the U.S. is declining, even as the administration is trying to eliminate or loosen over 70 regulations. For State Impact Pennsylvania, the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier reports.
Wheeler said President Trump gave him a simple directive when he asked him to head up the EPA.
He asked me to focus on three things. He said clean up the air, continue cleaning up the water, and continue providing regulatory relief so that we can create jobs and keep the economy booming.
Wheeler said the rollbacks have already saved companies over $1 billion in costs. And he pointed out that despite the administration's moves to curtail carbon dioxide regulations, greenhouse gas emissions actually dropped nearly 3% in Donald Trump's first year in office.
The Trump administration has proven that federal regulations are not necessary to drive greenhouse gas reductions.
Experts say those reductions have more to do with the switch from coal to natural gas, a phenomenon made possible by the fracking boom, and also regulations like fuel efficiency standards for cars that the administration is trying to undo. Local environmental groups criticized Wheeler's visit to Pittsburgh, saying the administration's rollbacks of air and water regulations could endanger public health. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
Another prominent person interested in carbon emissions was in Pittsburgh recently. That's because the city of Pittsburgh has been named a winner of Bloomberg Philanthropy's American Cities Climate Challenge. 90.5 WESA's Onley Herring reports that former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg was in town to announce the award.
Bloomberg says his foundation will give Pittsburgh more than $2.5 million to advance its climate action plan. He says cities are at the forefront of efforts to curb carbon emissions because their leaders understand the benefits.
Energy efficiency saves taxpayers money. Mass transit and bike lanes help people get around. Parks make cities more attractive places to live, to work, and to raise kids. And reducing traffic improves economic productivity.
Pittsburgh's plan includes steps to use renewable energy for all city operations and to cut citywide energy consumption in half. It also promotes greater use of electric vehicles and improvements to bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Onley Herring.
Philadelphia was also awarded about $2 million from the Bloomberg American Cities Climate Challenge. While climate change might be the biggest challenge cities and humanity has ever faced, it hasn't been at the forefront of the race for Pennsylvania governor this year. Both Governor Tom Wolf and his Republican challenger, Scott Wagner, acknowledge that climate change is occurring, but neither has made addressing it a top priority. State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick has the story.
A report out this month from the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change paints a dire picture. By 2040, there's a strong risk of crisis, including food shortages, wildfires, and a mass die-off of coral reefs, unless greenhouse gas emissions are sharply cut. The report is aimed directly at policymakers.
The world has little more than a decade to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide released into the atmosphere, or it may be too late.
Yet it's unclear if that sense of urgency has sunk in here in Pennsylvania. Although the state has a small share of the global population, it's an energy powerhouse that's both historically and currently a major source of harmful emissions. Wagner, who built his fortune in the waste hauling business, was widely mocked last year when he offered up this explanation for the warming.
You know, I haven't been in a science class in a long time, but the Earth moves closer to the sun, you know, every year.
He stepped in it again over the summer when a young woman at a campaign event asked him about climate change. He called her young and naive and was criticized for being both sexist and dismissive of an important issue. The Wolf campaign immediately jumped on the gaffe, handing out bumper stickers that read, "Young and Naive Voter." Wagner walked back those comments in August when he acknowledged climate change exists, but said he couldn't do much about it.
If anybody thinks that as governor, I can go into the governor's office and flip a switch and that I can change all this, I can't.
Although Wolf's campaign has seized on Wagner's climate comments, the governor has not taken a prominent role in addressing the issue. He has taken steps to curb methane leaks from oil and gas sites and backed measures that promote cleaner energy. He signed a bill last year aimed at encouraging solar power within the state and another bill to help commercial property owners finance clean energy upgrades. But in a recent interview with the Philadelphia Inquirer editorial board, Wolf falsely stated that he had expanded the state's renewable energy targets.
I've increased the portfolio requirements, and if there's more that I can do, I'm open to suggestions as to how I can do that.
Actually, he's already pledged to do more. In 2014, Wolf said he'd introduce legislation during his first year in office that would set higher clean energy targets for the state, but he didn't follow through. The existing law, known as the Alternative Energy Portfolio Standard, requires utilities to buy 8% of their power from clean sources, like wind and solar. The law was considered cutting edge when it passed in 2004, but since then, many other states have set far more aggressive targets. In the same Inquirer interview, Wolf linked his support of the large petrochemical plant Shell is building near Pittsburgh to the need for more renewable energy.
The future is going to be solar, wind, sustainable and renewable energy sources. So here in Pennsylvania, one of the things that I'm doing is trying to promote things like the cracker plant.
The cracker plant will transform Marcellus shale resources into ethylene, a building block of the plastics industry. And when it comes online, it will be among the largest air pollution sources in the state. Wolf has also not followed through on a campaign pledge to join the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. The market-based system, known as REGGIE, is a collaboration among northeastern states to limit emissions. Earlier this year, Wolf denied ever making such a pledge.
I don't remember making that promise. And in fact, I do remember I didn't make that promise.
In fact, he did. Here's what he said back in 2014 while running for office.
I want to be part of any compact that's trying to make our air cleaner, and I think REGGIE tries to do that.
It's unlikely the Republican-led legislature would go along with any efforts Wolf might make to cut carbon emissions, but green groups have criticized him for not taking a harder line on the issue. Research shows Pennsylvania voters care about it. In a Franklin and Marshall College State Impact Pennsylvania poll earlier this year, a majority said that climate change is causing problems right now and the state should be doing more to address it. Marie Cusick, State Impact Pennsylvania.
There's a new petrochemical plant being built along the Ohio River, and some are hoping that proposals for more will go through to reboot manufacturing and jobs. But it's not a future everyone agrees on.
You know, this is a beautiful, beautiful river, and it has undergone so much stress and pollution over the years that it's going to really require effort by everybody to make her healthy again.
Coming up later on the Allegheny Front, the dream of a chemical boom in the Ohio Valley. Stay tuned. So we know a little bit more about what two of the candidates in Pennsylvania's race for governor think about climate change. But what about the many other candidates on the midterm ballot? To find out about their views on climate change and other environmental issues, Public Source, a news outlet in Pittsburgh, and the Allegheny Front sent them a survey. We emailed 6 questions to each candidate that will appear on the ballot in Allegheny County, including statewide races, and received responses from 19 of them. To talk with me about the results, Oliver Morrison, the environmental reporter at Public Source, is here. Hey, Oliver.
Hi.
So let's just dig into some of these questions. Question number 1 was, do you accept the scientific consensus that human-made emissions are driving climate change? Why or why not? And if yes, are we doing enough to address it? So a couple of the libertarian candidates were skeptical about the science regarding the scope and severity of climate change. And the libertarian candidate who did think it was a pressing problem said, maybe not surprisingly, that private industry should be addressing it. But what about the rest of the field?
The consensus among all the Democrats and the Green Party candidates is that the science is reliable and we should be doing something about it. Especially with the Green Party candidates, they have like a really ambitious agenda. They want to put a lot of money into green energy. They want to limit fossil fuel use. They want to decentralize the grid. So instead of big coal power plants, you have, you know, you or someone in your local community might have a big solar panel or some sort of wind turbine, and that energy could fund the energy in your neighborhood, and this would create this big web of energy that could be the main source of power. They want to tax the fossil fuel industry and are pushing this sort of long proposed severance tax, so doing things like that to address it. A lot of the Democrats also agreed with the science but tended to be a little bit less specific on exactly what they wanted to do to increase action on climate change.
One of the big regional questions is about Shell's ethane cracker plant, which is being built in Beaver County. And the question was, what do you think will be more important for the long-term health of the region, the jobs that will come from the Shell ethane cracker plant or the air and water pollution stemming from its operations, and why? And the candidate for state representative in the 16th, Robert Matzey, he's a Democrat, and he said, I disagree with the premise of the question. I don't think it's an either-or proposition, and that sort of thinking has helped cloud the issue because both are possible. And that seemed to be the party line for a lot of the Democrats running, but not all. What were some of the takeaways from this question?
Now, I thought it was interesting in general how from the right and the left, they both often decided to try and evade this idea that there's a trade-off between the environment and industry. And on the right, it was because you know, the industry is already doing what it should be on the environment. And on the left, it was because they thought that there's lots of potential for green jobs and that green jobs are going to make it so that there's not really an environmental trade-off if we just invest in that.
The right libertarian,
the libertarian candidates, sorry, the more conservative candidates. I think there's a couple things that are interesting about the cracker plant in particular. A lot of the candidates, particularly the mainstream candidates like Senator Bob Casey, are really pushing the jobs. He wanted to really emphasize that he was a person pushing for this and didn't even say anything initially about some of the potential environmental impacts. Among a lot of the other candidates that were really supportive of the jobs, they tend to at least emphasize that it was important to regulate the emissions, that they weren't emitting any pollution that they shouldn't be emitting. I think one of the things you mostly omitted from the people that were in favor of the plant was they didn't really talk about climate change because this plant is also going to increase a lot of greenhouse gases in the area, and they didn't really address that. Whereas about slightly under half of the Democrats were kind of opposed to this and felt like when you added up all of the environmental costs that it wasn't worth it for the 600 regular jobs that you were going to get.
Hmm. And while there was no specific question about fracking within the 6 questions that were asked, many candidates did mention a natural gas severance tax as a way to better fund the state's Department of Environmental Protection.
I think one of the things that's really interesting in terms of who responded, so we didn't get any responses from the Republicans, and in a way I think that really obviously reflects how important in some ways the environment and addressing these environmental issues are to their constituency. On the other hand, I think that what we've seen from the Democrats is that they haven't controlled the Senate or the General Assembly and the governorship, all 3 of them at one time since 1993, and then only for a year. So even among the Democratic candidates, when you look at the specific proposals that they did have, a lot of them tended to be ones that have come up a lot, but there's been no traction. So we hear the severance tax again, and that's something that's come up again and again, but hasn't had any traction. So there wasn't a lot of new ideas about compromises or new ways of bringing forward a proposal that might actually get some traction. So I think a lot of what we get when you're choosing candidates is, well, if we choose the Democrats, we know that these are their values, but we don't necessarily know exactly what we would be getting on the other end, except for maybe the severance tax might come through.
We mentioned Republicans. No Republicans responded to your request. What do you make of that? Did anyone in their offices tell you why they didn't respond? I know you followed up with phone calls.
So I got a couple of emails saying, yeah, we're going to get to this, but then just never did get a response. I mean, part of it is just there are a lot fewer Republican candidates. A lot of these Democrats are running unopposed. But we did have about 15 that we reached out to and didn't hear back from any of them. And when you look at the surveys of the issues that people care most about among large chunks of the population, the environment is always like fourth or fifth or a lot further down the list than first. And that's among the Democrats who are thinking about labor and jobs. And so the one thing that I think is interesting that is a little bit surprising to me is that one of the core constituencies in this election that everyone's paying attention to are this idea of suburban moms, that women in the suburbs are going to be a really important decider in how this election is going to go both nationally and locally. And we do know that a lot of those women really do care about the environment. They care about parks for their kids and pollution and how healthy their children are. Maybe this election will make a difference, and maybe Republican candidates in the future, if those voters come out and vote on the environment, maybe they'll pay more attention. But they didn't respond this time.
And just following up on what you were saying before about the Green Party candidates did have a lot of ideas, but a lot of them were very far to the left of what a lot of Democrats even are comfortable with, Democratic voters or Democratic politicians.
A lot of the emphasis is on really investing money into green energy. And so there's some really specific ways you can do that. And one of the specific ways is increasing the subsidies at the state level. It's currently set to increase sort of slowly the amount of money we give to green energy. And so there's some proposals that you could to just increase that a little bit faster. That's one of the main strategies. And then the other main strategy that a couple candidates brought up was just setting a really big, ambitious target into the future. Like, we're going to have 100% renewable energy by 2050. One of the other things I thought was interesting is, like, we asked them a question about whether or not we should subsidize coal power or nuclear power or green energy, just following up on this. And that's a really big issue locally because there have been proposals by the Trump administration to subsidize coal or subsidize nuclear because there are local coal and nuclear plants that say that they're going to close without this additional subsidy. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting, especially among all these liberal candidates, is very few of them called out coal. And I'm not sure if that's because in this area that there's just a sense that, you know, you don't want to speak badly about an industry that's long held an important place here. But we do know that the elimination of coal and the way that natural gas has outcompeted coal has been one of the biggest boons to improving air quality in the region and lowering climate change emissions. So there was only a few candidates that said, you know, that really made any specific effort towards saying that that's something we should focus on.
So only the Green Party and Libertarian candidates for governor and lieutenant governor responded to these questions. You didn't hear from high-profile candidates like John Fetterman, Jeff Bartos, Tom Wolf, and Scott Wagner.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised, especially with John Fetterman in sort of our backyard. I thought we might hear from him. I mean, the only thing I can think is he's really been an outspoken proponent of labor unions. He's recently, when they were proposing to strike, he was out in front speaking about that. And when you look at his website, you see him talking a lot about jobs and reinvestment and trying to do things to bring back economic vitality to the area. It doesn't really mention on his website the environment that much. So I guess it's just not an issue that he's focusing on. That's, you know, that's not his priority.
Do you think that the responses that we got are illuminating for voters? Will they change anyone's mind or provide a benchmark to hold politicians accountable after the election?
The biggest advantage, I think, of what I saw from the collection of responses is it's kind of a litmus test of where we are, what are the different ideas that are out there, and what is the variety of opinions? It felt very reflective of the different debates that are going on in the country right now. I think that most of the candidates, perhaps for smart political reasons, sort of didn't nail down specifics that they're going to be held to at the end. They were a little bit more general. But I think in terms of just getting a general sense of all the different issues and where what are the potential positions candidates can hold, it's pretty good for that.
Great. Thank you so much for talking with me.
All right. Thank you.
Oliver Morrison reports about environmental issues for Public Source in Pittsburgh. A complete breakdown of the questions and answers from the environmental survey of political candidates will be published on October 29th. There's more at AlleghenyFront.org. You're listening to The Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holzapfel. Are you tuning in to our Trump on Earth podcast? We're tracking changes in environmental policy under the Trump administration.
In that case, the EPA's own engineers and scientists were like, what's going on here? How's it possible that the EPA could be creating a loophole to allow dirty trucks back on the highways?
In the most recent episode, we talked to New York Times reporter Eric Lipton about efforts by some at the Environmental Protection Agency to roll back regulations for clean air, water, and chemical safety. That's the Trump on Earth podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, or TrumpOnEarth.org. While Pennsylvanians have gotten used to the ups and downs of Marcellus shale gas development, down the Ohio River, there's anticipation for the next phase of the industry. In the last 6 years, Ohio has seen new gas wells, pipelines, and gas-fired power plants. The Allegheny Friend's Julie Grant reports that beyond cheap electricity, the state is looking to use shale gas to rebuild its manufacturing base.
The Ohio Valley has long been known for coal and making steel, but the future, according to some predictions, is natural gas and plastics. Richard Regula is a commissioner in Stark County, Ohio, and is working to expand the petrochemical industry.
What's going to happen in this region, in the Utica and the Marcellus shale plays, is going to impact us in a positive direction for the next 100 years, in my opinion, at least 50.
More than 2,400 gas wells have been drilled using hydraulic fracturing in Ohio since 2012. Regula is talking not only about the cheap gas from that, but the spin-off industries and development many expect. Excitement's been building since this announcement back in 2016.
This morning, local leaders learned that Shell Chemical will be building an ethane cracker plant in Beaver County.
Right now, the ethane, which is a component of the natural gas that's produced at the region's wells, is exported to China, Europe, or piped to the Gulf Coast. Shell's $6 billion facility along the Ohio River in Pennsylvania will crack the ethane at very high temperatures to make ethylene locally.
Ethylene is a major raw material for the production of polyethylene.
Heather Rose Glowacki is with the American Chemistry Council, a trade group.
Polyethylene goes into thousands of products that people use every day.
Like plastic bags.
You know, medical devices.
And car parts. A study by the Chemistry Council looked at the ethane supply in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia.
It seems to us, we believe that there could be up to 5 ethane crackers supported in that region.
They envision an Appalachian petrochemical hub as an alternative to the Gulf Coast. Supporters of this idea like to repeat these numbers. 12,000 manufacturers who use plastics are already located within a day's drive, 600 miles of the region. But those manufacturers don't have access to a local supply of polyethylene.
Right now, this industry operates and using the product that is transported from the Gulf Coast, from Texas, from Louisiana, from other established petrochemical places.
Irina Lendl is an economist at Cleveland State University who researches the oil and gas industry in Ohio. She says ethane crackers close the loop between gas wells and plastic manufacturers.
That's a whole point, to link our oil and gas that we are pumping out to use this, refine it, and use this within the region.
A decision is expected soon about construction of a second ethane cracker, a $10 billion facility that would be built along the river in Ohio. And a company called Mountaineer NGL Storage could start storing natural gas liquids like ethane in salt caverns in the region as soon as next year. Lindell says that to create a real petrochemical hub, the region would also need more plastic and resin manufacturing, more chemical manufacturing, and more petroleum refineries to build a supply chain.
The more product we refine within the region, the more and longer we keep this product within our economies, the more we capture benefits and economic wealth.
More than 75,000 people in Ohio are already employed in the plastics industry, second nationally to California. That's according to the Plastics Industry Association. Pennsylvania has 47,000 working in plastics. Officials in Stark County, Ohio, say the Shell cracker is already creating new business interests there.
Oh, I think it's extremely exciting.
Ray Hexamer, president of the Stark Economic Development Board, says in the past 6 months alone, three companies have come to them looking at opportunities in the plastics industry.
What it means for Northeast Ohio, they're good paying jobs. Those jobs will elevate the economic environment for our community. We all get lifted by a rising tide.
A new, yet-to-be-published study by economists at Washington and Jefferson College, south of Pittsburgh, bolsters that argument. It finds that counties with ethane crackers have higher individual earnings than the national average by more than $5,600 per year. The study found that counties adjacent to cracker plants also saw an earnings boost. But of course, locking the region into a petrochemical hub of gas wells, pipelines, chemical cracking, and plastics manufacturing is concerning to many people. Outside a meeting of Marcellus Shale industry leaders in Pittsburgh this week, about 60 people, including members of various native tribes, gather to protest, standing where the Allegheny meets the Ohio River. Sharon Day of Minnesota, a member of the Ojibwe Nation, remembers her long walk along the Ohio a few years ago.
You know, this is a beautiful, beautiful river. And it has undergone so much stress and pollution over the years that it's going to really require effort by everybody to make her healthy again.
Well, supporters of petrochemical development say they trust regulators to protect public safety and the environment. Cheryl Johncox of the Sierra Club's Beyond Dirty Fuels campaign, based in Columbus, Ohio, doesn't think they should.
We can't assume that the regulators are taking care of that anymore.
She points to the recent explosion of a natural gas pipeline that destroyed a home in Pennsylvania as an example of the safety concerns. And when it comes to keeping the air and water clean, Johncox gives a litany of regulatory rollbacks.
They are trying to gut the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, all the components, the methane emissions protocols. They've attacked the Clean Power Plan. They're attacking the Ohio River Water Sanitation Commission. There is a no-holds-bar on those protections.
In Ohio, Stark County Commissioner Richard Regula doesn't see reason for concern about the environment. His family has a long history in Ohio politics, including his father Ralph Regula's 18 terms in Congress.
My father was the founder of the Ohio EPA, and I'm carrying on his legacy to protect the environment. But to me, this is a once-in-a-generation opportunity.
Regula is pushing for roadway improvements to help expansion of a Marathon oil refinery in his county and looks forward to all the jobs he expects in the coming years. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
Thanks for joining us on the Allegheny Front. You can always find us on Facebook and Twitter at Allegheny Front. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of our show. I'm Carol Holsapple.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments, the Pittsburgh Foundation, and the Park Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports our coverage of conservation. State Impact Pennsylvania is a collaboration among the Allegheny Front, WESA, WITF, and WHYY to cover the Commonwealth's energy economy.